Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, April 28th, 2021. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline on today's paper is Many Summer Youth Programs Set to Return by Allie Hinga. After largely taking a hiatus in 2020, local summer youth programs are coming back in force this year with COVID-19 related modifications. Quote, I think we're most excited about seeing our community members again and reconnecting and coming out of this, hopefully, stronger than we were before, unquote, said Dan Kroger, Recreation Division Manager for the City of Dubuque. Multiple local organizations and municipalities confirmed their plans to bring back or amp up their summer youth programs this year after the pandemic prompted many of them to significantly modify or cancel their usual offerings in 2020. Officials said demand for summer programming so far has been strong as families seek to return to more normal routines. Especially this year, I think parents are wanting to get back to a little bit of normalcy and have their kids enjoy their summer, said Rebecca Mueller, Director of Enrollment for Holy Family Catholic Schools in Dubuque. City of Dubuque staff members plan to offer many of their traditional summer recreation offerings, such as the drop-in playground program, youth sports camps and classes, youth enrichment classes, and swimming lessons, Kroger said. City staff will release the summer recreation brochure this week and hope to open up registration for programs on May 10th. The variety of programs this year will be similar to a typical summer, though there will be fewer offerings overall because of the way programs are being timed this year, Kroger said. He noted the staff is trying to hold as many programs outside as possible. Participants in any indoor programming will be required to wear masks, and participants in outdoor activities will be highly encouraged to wear masks. Staff also will seek to keep class sizes manageable to allow for social distancing. In programs that include crafts, participants will receive individual supplies that they can take home with them afterward. Kroger also noted that the city will not turn on drinking fountains in facilities or parks. Quote, we're really encouraging the use of water bottles, especially reusable water bottles for participants that are coming to our program, he said. In Platteville, Wisconsin, city staff plan to offer more of their summer sports programs this year, along with a new recess program in Smith Park that will run after summer school lets out for the day, said Luke Peters, Parks and Recreation Director. I think there's still going to be modifications, but we're starting to return to what kids might have been used to before, he said. Some local colleges are bringing back summer program offerings this year. University of Dubuque officials already are taking registrations for this year's UD for Kids, and Clark University is planning a variety of youth sports camps and basketball shootouts. Quote, you can sense excitement from parents, particularly those parents that have participated or their kids have participated before, said Peggy Driscoll, director of UD for Kids. They're anxious to have their kids coming back doing something. Officials with the Loras College All Sports Camp previously announced the cancellation of this year's program. Mueller said Holy Family leaders are bringing back their summer camps, offering as much as possible with masking and distancing guidelines, as well as efforts to have students outside as much as possible. She said some camps still have openings, though others filled up right away this year as demand so far has been high. Other local officials also said there has been plenty of interest in summer programming. At the Galena, Illinois Art and Recreation Center, staff were forced to reduce the capacity of their summer camp program last year, but are back up to full licensure now. Even with the increased capacity, however, spots in the summer camp program filled up swiftly. Child care director Brenda Jekyll said, on the first day of registration, 69 children signed up to participate. Quote, I think families were like, oh, we want normalcy for our kids, so we want them back in the routine of doing summer camps and sports camps, Jekyll said. She said that while the summer camp is full, the ARC plans to offer other programming for youth and adults, such as music, arts, and cooking classes. It really feels great, Jekyll said. These are restrictions, and we're going to abide by the restrictions. But it feels great to have some normalcy. Unquote. Platteville Museum Celebrating Milestones by Bennett Goldstein. Dateline, Platteville, Wisconsin. Visitors attending the opening of the Mining and Rollo Jameson Museums this weekend will be greeted with refreshed exhibitions and a renewed pioneer spirit as the museum moves forward after the COVID-19 pandemic shuttered most face-to-face operations. Celebrating a trifecta of milestones this year, staff and volunteers hope to tell stories that establish a sense of place, both of the Driftless region's natural history and the people who live there, from prehistory to the life of the museum's benefactor, Rollo Jameson. We are looking forward to a full season of interesting things to come, said Museum Director Eric Flesch. This is such a time of revitalization for the museum. A free community day for Platteville residents will kick off the season when the museum opens to the public on Saturday, May 1st. The new year marks the return of tours, school field trips, and rides on the 1930s-era Mine Railroad located south of the museum. It will also be a celebration. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the completion of the Mining Museum, the 45th anniversary of the 1845 Bevins Lead Mines opening to visitors, and the 40th anniversary of the opening of the Rollo Jameson Museum in Platteville. Exhibits this year will focus on earth science and technology, natural history, and a reinterpretation of the collections of the late Rollo Jameson. The B-Town native collected artifacts from southwest Wisconsin for more than 70 years and displayed them in a private museum until his failing health prompted him to bequeath his antiquities to the city of Platteville in 1980. Jameson was known for acquiring multiple types of the same object, often those found in daily life, such as wrenches, corkscrews, corn huskers, and barbed wire samples. He saw a piece of history in each of these, said museum specialist Rachel Vang. He had an idea that there was a story behind each of them. Multiple events are planned this year, including Heritage Day on July 4th, Young Pioneers Camp from July 19th to 22nd, and Mine Day on August 21st. Guest curator and visual artist Mary Bergs also has helped plan an art exhibition, which opens this week at Roundtree Gallery, 120 West Main Street, showcasing pieces inspired by the museum's collections. Bergs said that behind-the-scenes work at the museum excites her. Staff and volunteers are busy cataloging the museum's holdings, estimated at about 100,000 objects, and preserving its extensive historical map collection. Meanwhile, both buildings on the museum campus, the 1860 Rock School building and the 1905 Hanmer Robbins building, will undergo renovations in the coming months and are in the process of being added to the National Register of Historic Places. Even during the pandemic, when the museum was not open to visitors, staff launched a new website, created an online virtual tour, and assembled a video library that highlights the campus and the museum's collections. Two archaeological consultants, Danielle Benden and Ernie Bozhart, just started to organize and date the museum's lithic collection, which includes stone tools that are more than 10,000 years old. The museum will unveil a new exhibit based upon those items this fall, which will place new emphasis on the stories of the indigenous peoples who use them. Not only do we tell the rock and mineral story, but we also tell the story of life, Flesch said. This idea of the spirit of pioneering, inquiry, discovery, development, and enterprise. Health officials ramp up minority outreach. By Benjamin Fisher. A committee working with the Dubuque County COVID-19 Incident Management Team kicked off a series of Q&A sessions aimed to spread facts about vaccines to marginalized and vulnerable populations Tuesday night. During the inaugural session, a panel of area physicians of color answered questions about COVID-19 and the vaccines against it posed and the vaccine's questions against it posed by members of the community, specifically with populations that have shown a higher level of vaccine hesitancy. Quote, "In my family, they raised me to be a doctor, yet for my dad, it was like pulling teeth," said Dr. Wanaki Carr, an OB-GYN with Genesis Health Group. "Our history in our country, how black and brown people have been treated, made a lot of people distrustful of the system," unquote. The Iowa Department of Public Health defines vulnerable populations as those with no insurance, those who are homeless, the incarcerated, college students, those with chronic medical conditions, as well as Hispanic, Black, Asian, Pacific Islander, and Native Americans. The most recent data provided by the Dubuque County Health Department from April 16th showed major inequities in vaccine administration between races. For instance, 83% of vaccine doses in Dubuque County have been administered to white residents. Another 15% have been administered to people who did not provide their race, so those are unknown. Black residents have received just 0.65% of doses administered, but make up about 3% of the county population, based on U.S. Census Bureau estimates. To address these disparities, a group of community members formed an equity immersion team to advise the county's incident management team. Quote, "We had been concerned about equity from the beginning of the pandemic," said City of Dubuque Human Rights Department Director Kelly Larson, who serves on the equity immersion team. "We knew a lot of our populations were going to be less likely or less able to absorb the information through the traditional streams. So when the vaccine hesitancy proved to be a problem, the team came up with these panels. We heard from many members of the community who are concerned about side effects," said Colin Ebo, Organizational Equity Coordinator for the Human Rights Department. "Some are saying, I'd rather not go through the side effects. I'd rather just take my chances." To that, Dr. Bobby Cornaru, a radiation oncologist for Unity Point Health, Finley Hospital, said, "The odds are very long for severe side effects, like the blood clots linked to the handful of recipients of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine." Quote, "COVID is known to cause blood clots in something like 165,000 per 1 million versus the 1 in a million from the vaccine," he said. "And even common medications we take like Tylenol and Motrin have mild side effects. They are way more common than the side effects you would see from this vaccine," unquote. Tuesday night's panel discussion was held on Facebook Live as well as Zoom. Larson said a recording would be available at facebook.com/Dubuque. Rights for those who could not catch it, would be available at facebook.com/Dubuque.rights for those who could not catch it live. Danielle Moore, an employee of John Deere Dubuque Works, who also serves on the board of Crescent Community Health Center and is Black, said these discussions could be a way to wipe away hesitancy. Quote, "I unfortunately know too many people who have passed away from COVID," she said. "It's personal for me because I want people to live, but I had to do the same education in my family. Mom, don't click on that YouTube video. You have to have someone you trust. I can trust my doctors," unquote. Larson said her team has been getting the message out about the series of panel discussions through groups like the Switching Places Foundation, the Latino Empowerment and Development Group, Key City Pride, as well as relying on partners like Wednesday night panelist A. Alanda Gregory, who has been working with minority-owned businesses. Quote, "We have regular people in the community describe the kinds of things they took into account when they were thinking about it," Larson said. "It's not an easy thing to do, to try and give people the information without avoiding their questions or putting pressure on them to get the vaccine, and people's individual circumstances matter," unquote. The second Q&A session will take place from 7 to 8 p.m. today and will be hosted by Switching Places Foundation. It will feature Dr. Alexander Johnson of Grand River Medical Group, Dr. Christopher Little of Medical Associates, and community members Gregory Mary Gittow and Corey Young, also a member of the County Board of Health. Viewers can watch and submit questions at Facebook. dubuque.com/queensforpeace or with passcode 231145. Museum Planning, Rivers to the Sea by Eric Hogstrom. A local museum seeks to reaffirm the connections between Dubuque and the wider world with the help of lionfish, kelp, and seahorses. The National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium on Tuesday announced plans to construct a Rivers to the Sea gallery of 10 aquariums featuring aquatic life from 4 areas of North America impacted by a river's relationship to the oceans. Quote, "For me, it's all about connections," said Andy Allison, the museum's vice president of living connections, vice president of living collections and education. "The biggest thing for us is raising awareness that everything we do in Dubuque impacts the rest of the world," unquote. The $1.2 million renovation of existing museum space is slated for completion in 2022. The museum received $300,000 from the Roy J. Carver Charitable Trust to help construct the gallery and continues a fundraising effort to cover the remaining costs. "We're excited," Allison said. "How do you get people excited to learn? One of the ways is showing them live animals. When a guest, a kid, sees an animal in person, their eyes light up. They remember things and they ask questions in ways that they don't get from watching TV. The expanded gallery will be located in the National Rivers Center, which was completed in 2010 and will be adjacent to a stingray touch tank. The stingray touch tank will remain," Allison said, "with everything else in that area of the museum being rebuilt. The museum staff is still deciding how and where the current water wall feature will be used in the facility." Quote, "Where the water wall is now, we're going to create a circular path around it with exhibits facing out from there," Allison said. "We will have 10 new aquariums throughout that whole space. Every one of those aquariums has a strong conservation message with it. What we're trying to do is bring people in, let the animals help tell their own stories, and make sure those stories we tell are helping the wild areas where these fish come from," unquote. The gallery will feature 4 habitat zones demonstrating river collections with oceans, the Mississippi River and the Gulf of Mexico, the St. Lawrence Seaway, and the Great Lakes, which impact the North Atlantic Ocean, the Northern Pacific Ocean, and the major rivers that flow into it, and the Sea of Cortez in Mexico, which is impacted by the Colorado River. Each zone will feature associated animals, such as seahorses. The seahorses help us tell the story of captive breeding. Most of the seahorses in aquariums are captive bred, Allison said. In the wild, they are in danger of over-harvesting for medical purposes or for use as curios. We will have lionfish, which will help us tell the story of invasive species. All of these are important stories to tell. The gallery scope will extend beyond animals, too. "There will be some unique cultural details," said Wendy Scardino, the museum's director of marketing and communications. "We will share some more of those details in the future." More than 100,000 area residents fully vaccinated. The Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and vaccination. Tuesday's developments included: one additional COVID-19-related death was reported in Dubuque County between 5 p.m. Monday and 5 p.m. Tuesday. The county's death toll rose to 2,006, the 6th highest total in the state. 12 additional residents of Dubuque County were confirmed to have COVID-19 during the 24-hour span. As of Tuesday, 100,205 residents of the Telegraph Herald's 10-county coverage area had been fully vaccinated, or 33.2% of the area's population. A series of walk-in COVID-19 vaccination clinics are planned in Dubuque this week. Today, clinics will be held from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Kennedy Mall vaccination site, and from 4 to 7 p.m. at Audubon Elementary School. Additional clinics are planned each day. The Dubuque County COVID-19 Incident Management Team and partners have scheduled a virtual question and answer session from 7 to 8 p.m. today, hosted by Switching Places Foundation. Viewers can watch and submit questions at facebook.com/queensforpeace. The state did not provide new county-level hospitalization data Tuesday. As of 5 p.m. Tuesday, Dubuque County had a 14-day positivity rate of 2.9%. Rates in other area Iowa counties were Clayton County, 1.8%, Delaware County, 2.7%, Jackson County, 3.9%, and Jones County, 2.8%. Regional Family Health in Manchester will offer vaccine appointments in Manchester beginning on Monday, May 3rd. To request an appointment, call 563-927-7777. Statewide, Iowa reported 372 additional residents with COVID-19 in the 24-hour period that ended at 5 p.m. Tuesday, increasing the state's total to 363,530. The state reported 3 additional related deaths as of 5 p.m. Tuesday, raising the death toll to 5,930. As of Tuesday, 999,451 people had been fully vaccinated in Iowa, an increase of 8,020 from Monday. In Wisconsin, a walk-in vaccination clinic will be held from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday, April 29th at Brosk Center, 1155 North 2nd Street in Platteville. Lafayette County Health Department will administer the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine on Thursday, April 29th. To request an appointment, call 608-776-4895. Crawford County has 2 COVID-19 vaccination clinics on Wednesday, May 5th at the Crawford County Administration Building in Prairie du Chien. The Pfizer vaccine will be offered from noon to 12:25 p.m. To register, visit form.jotform.com/211166160160139. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine will be offered from 12:35 p.m. to 1 p.m. Wisconsin reported 815 additional confirmed COVID-19 cases Tuesday, increasing its total to 595,864. The state's death toll increased by 17, raising the total to 6,773. As of Tuesday, 1.8 million Wisconsin residents have been fully vaccinated, or 31.9% of the population. In Illinois, vaccine appointments are available in Joe Davis County for a clinic on Thursday, April 29th. There were 2,556 new COVID-19 cases announced Tuesday in Illinois for a state total of 1,325,726. The state reported 22 additional related deaths, increasing the death toll to 21,858. Illinois also reported more than 3.8 million residents were fully vaccinated, or 30.1% of the state's population. COVID-19 vaccination data by county. In Iowa, Clayton County, 6,572 people have at least one dose. That is 37.4% of the county. 5,672 people have been fully vaccinated, and that is 32.3% of the county. In Delaware County, 6,671 people have at least one dose. That's 39.2% of the county. Fully vaccinated are 5,273, and that is 30.9% of the county. In Dubuque County, 46,405 people have been vaccinated. That's 47.6% of the county. Fully vaccinated are 35,961, and that is 36.9% of the county. In Jackson County, 7,685 people have been vaccinated with at least one dose. That's 39.5% of the county. Fully vaccinated are 5,839 people, and that is 30% of the county. In Jones County, 8,818 people have at least one dose of the vaccination of the vaccine. That's 42.6% of the county. 6,406 people have been fully vaccinated, and that is 30.9% of the county. In Illinois, Joe Davis County has vaccinated with at least one dose, 6,544 people. That is 30.6% of the county. Fully vaccinated are 6,410 people, and that is 30% of the county. In Wisconsin, in Crawford County, at least one dose has been given to 6,640 people. That is 41.2% of the county, and fully vaccinated are 5,508 people, or 34.1% of the county. In Grant County, 18,895 people have at least one dose. That's 36.7% of the county. 14,738 people have been fully vaccinated, or 28.7% of the county. In Iowa County, 11,418 people have at least one dose. That's 48.2% of the county. 8,680 people have been fully vaccinated, and that is 36.7% of the county. And in Lafayette County, 6,804 people have at least one dose. That is 40.8% of the county, and fully vaccinated are 5,718, or 34.3% of the county. In area COVID-19 cases as of Tuesday, by county, in Iowa County, Clayton County reports 1,678 confirmed cases, 56 deaths, recovered 1,576, and active cases of 46. In Delaware County, 2,061 people have confirmed cases. There have been 39 deaths. Recovered are 1,904, and active cases are 118. In Dubuque, 13,250 confirmed cases, 206 deaths. Recovered are 12,515, and active is 529. Area COVID-19 cases as of Tuesday by county. In Iowa County, Clayton has 1,678 confirmed cases, 56 deaths, 1,576 recovered, and 46 active. In Delaware County, 2,061 confirmed cases, 39 deaths, 1,904 recovered, and 118 active. In Dubuque County, 13,250 confirmed cases, 206 deaths, 12,515 recovered, and active cases 529. In Jackson County, 2,021 confirmed cases, 42 deaths, 2,109 recovered, and 50 active cases. In Jones County, 2,948 confirmed cases, 56 deaths, 2,842 recovered, and 50 active cases. In Illinois, in Joe Davis County, 1,787 confirmed cases, 26 deaths, 1,725 recovered, and 36 active cases. In Wisconsin, in Crawford County, 1,739 confirmed cases, 17 deaths, 1,711 recovered, and 11 active cases. In Grant County, 4,891 confirmed cases, 85 deaths, and recovered and active RNA. In Iowa County, 2,004 confirmed cases, 10 deaths, 1,970 recovered, and 24 active cases. And in Lafayette County, 1,546 confirmed cases, 8 deaths, recovered are 1,530 and 8 active cases. And for the news in brief, in Dubuque County, Durango, Iowa, a jury recently acquitted a Dubuque County man who was accused of sexually abusing a child younger than 10. Scott R. Jameson, 35, of Durango, was found to be not guilty in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County of charges of second-degree sexual abuse and lascivious acts with the child. Court documents stated that the alleged crimes in 2016 were reported to authorities in August 2019. Jameson denied the allegations when interviewed by investigators, documents state. Platinum-selling country band, Grammy-nominated rock group to perform. A platinum-selling country band and Grammy Award-nominated rock group are coming to Dubuque this summer. Lanco will appear at 7 p.m. June 25th, and Buckcherry performs at 7 p.m. August 5th, both at Five Flags Center, according to an online announcement by the venue. Lanco topped the country charts in 2017 with the single Greatest Love Story. The five-man band's Hallelujah Nights made Lanco the first country group to debut at number one on the Billboard Country Albums charts in 10 years. The band has performed in Dubuque several times previously. Buckcherry is best known for songs such as Lit Up and Sorry, the last of which cracked the top 10 on Billboard's Top 100 chart in 2008. The band's previous visits to Dubuque include shows in 2007, 2011, and 2018. Tickets for both shows are available beginning at 10 a.m. Friday, April 30th at the Five Flags box office. Lanco tickets range from $30 to $42, and Buckcherry tickets cost $34 to $45. You are listening to a reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, April 28th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Leland H. Rundy, Keeler, Wisconsin. Leland H. Buck Rundy, 92, of Keeler, Wisconsin, passed away peacefully surrounded by his loving family on Saturday, April 24th, 2021, at Epione Pavilion, Cuba City, Wisconsin. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, May 3rd, 2021, at Immaculate Conception Church, Keeler, Wisconsin, with Reverend Bernard Rott officiating. Services will be live-streamed through Facebook on the funeral home page. Burial will be at a later date. A public visitation for friends will be held from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday at Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City, Wisconsin, where there will be a scripture wake service at 5 p.m. Friends may also call Monday at the Immaculate Conception Parish Center from 9 to 10:15 a.m. The family requests that you utilize masks during the duration of your visit at the funeral home, parish center, and in the church, and that you practice social distancing. Harold Horn. Harold Harry Horn, 85, of Dubuque, died Tuesday, April 27, 2021, at the Ennoble Skilled Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Dubuque. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, May 1st, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 3860 Asbury Road. Masks are required, and we ask that you please respect our current social distancing requirements. If you are not feeling well or are unable to attend, we encourage you to visit www.hskfhcares.com to send a message to Harold's family. The funeral service for Harold will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, May 1st, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, with Pastor Calvin Knopp officiating. Masks are required, and we ask that you please respect our current social distancing requirements. Burial will be in Linwood Cemetery in Dubuque. Full military honors will be rendered by the American Legion Post No. 6. The service will be live-streamed on Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home's Facebook page and will also be available to view later at hskfhcares.com. Bernadette Rees, Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Sister Bernadette Rees, O.P., died April 20th, 2021, at St. Dominic Villa, Hazel Green, Wisconsin. She was born Teresa Louise, August 2nd, 1938, to Alfred and Mary DeBoo Rees in Conrad, Montana. Services will be held in Sinisewa, April 28th and 29th, and burial will be in Spokane, Washington. Miller Funeral Home is handling arrangements. Burdette Dauphine, Savannah, Illinois. Burdette Bert Dauphin, 71, of Savannah, died on Monday, April 26, 2021. Visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Friday, April 30th, at Law Jones Funeral Home in Savannah. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, May 1st, at First United Methodist Church in Savannah. Mary Lou Weaver, Darlington, Wisconsin. Mary Lou Weaver, 79, of Darlington, died on Monday, April 26, 2021. A visitation will be held from 9 to 11:30 a.m. Saturday, May 1st, at First Baptist Church in Darlington, where a funeral service will take place at noon. Burial will be in Union Grove Cemetery in Darlington. Erickson Funeral Home of Darlington is assisting the family. Doreen M. McCarthy, Piasta, Iowa. Doreen M. McCarthy, 93, of Piasta, Iowa, passed away Monday, April 26, at 2:59 a.m. at home, surrounded by her family. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, May 1st, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, with Reverend Diane Grace officiating. Burial will be in the Resurrection Cemetery. Visitation will be from 3 to 7 p.m. on Friday, April 30th, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory. Please remember to wear your mask, and if you are unable to attend, a live stream of the funeral service will be on the Funeral Home Facebook page. James J. Finn, Westmont, Illinois. James J. Finn, 77, of Westmont and formerly of Dubuque, died on Sunday, April 18, 2021. Private services will be held. Toon Funeral Home of Downers Grove is assisting the family. Funeral services. Charles Fields, Shelbsburg, Wisconsin. Visitation 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, May 1st. Erickson Funeral Home, Shelbsburg. Cheryl L. Fleur, Dickeyville, Wisconsin. Visitation 10 a.m. until time of service, Thursday, April 29th. Auden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Services 11 a.m. Thursday at the funeral home. Kalisa L. Jaster, Garber, Iowa. Visitation 2 to 8 p.m. today, Leonard Muller Funeral Home, Edgewood, Iowa. Services 10 a.m. Thursday, April 29th, St. John Congregational Church, Garber. Shirley A. Jones, Dubuque. Visitation 9 to 11 a.m. today, Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Services, 3860 Asbury Road. Service 11 a.m. today at the funeral home. Shirley A. Regan, Dubuque. Visitation 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, April 29th. Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 3860 Asbury Road. Massive Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Friday, April 30th. Sacred Heart Catholic Church, Dubuque. Teresa Simon, East Dubuque, Illinois. Visitation 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. Saturday, May 1st. Holy Trinity Catholic Church, Dubuque. Massive Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Saturday at the church. Milton E. Weber, Lamont, Iowa. Visitation 3 to 8 p.m. today. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Massive Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Thursday, April 29th. St. Donatus Catholic Church, St. Donatus, Iowa. And Roberta Wiederholt, Chester, California. Visitation 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. Saturday, May 1st. Holy Trinity Catholic Church, Dubuque. Massive Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Saturday at the church. Jerry H. Culbertson, Baldwin, Iowa. Jerry H. Culbertson, 76, of Baldwin, Iowa, passed away peacefully on Saturday, April 24, 2021, at his home. Memorial services celebrating Jerry's life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, May 8, 2021, at Carson Celebration of Life Center in Maquoketa. The celebration will continue following the service with a gathering of family and friends from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Eagles Club in Maquoketa. It will be required to utilize face masks and to observe social distancing guidelines during the gathering and services. Marjorie L. Degree. Marjorie Lucille Looney Degree, 92, of Dubuque, completed a well-lived life and died peacefully on Saturday, April 24, 2021. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory in Dubuque is assisting the family. To leave online condolences, please visit www.leonardfuneralhome.com. Marge's ashes will be interred next to her husband at a family graveside gathering at Mount Olivet Cemetery at a later date. In lieu of visitation, the family invites friends to write their thoughts, memories, or stories about Marge and send them to Marge Degree's family, 6792 Old Massey Road, Dubuque, Iowa, 52003. Margaret M. Schmerbach, Lamont, Iowa. Margaret M. Schmerbach, 84, of Lamont, died on Monday, April 26, 2021. Visitation will be held from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Friday, April 30th at St. Joseph Key West Church, where a funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, is assisting the family. Now turning to the sports page. Rams win county title. This is prep track and field in Dubuque County. Meet Boys Rams win the county title by Danny Miller. Sam Akins was looking for a little revenge after what he felt was not his best long jump effort at the Drake Relays. His attitude resonated with his Dubuque senior teammates as the Rams claimed the team title with 173 points at the Dubuque County Championships on Tuesday night at Dalzell Field. "Coming into today, I was pretty focused," Akins said. "I didn't do as well as I wanted at Drake, so I just tried to stay focused and give it 100%. I just wanted to put some points up for us." Hempstead finished second in the team standings with 140 points, and Western Dubuque third with 110. Wallert placed fourth with 63, followed by Cascade at 60 and Beckman at 24. Akins was a trendsetter for the Rams as he posted the team's first gold of the night with a personal best in the long jump with a distance of 22 feet, 1 1/2 inches. The distance was good enough for third all-time in senior history. David Williams continued his dominance in the 100 with a season-best time of 11.28. The senior also took first in the 200 with 22.78. Matthew Cruz carried along momentum from a strong showing at Drake with a win in the 400 and with the 400 hurdles. Cruz also ran in the 4x400 with Jack Atchison, Cole Smith, Easton Stackus, claiming gold. It put an exclamation mark on the sixth gold medal of the night for senior. Hempstead won four events, starting with a 1-2 punch in the 3,000. Ryan Winger took top honors with a time of 10:08.92, and teammate Josh Davis was second with in 10:19.87. George Holsinger, Mason Suarez, Jonathan O'Brien, and Owen Maloney won the 4x800. Maloney won the 800, and Winger took home his second gold of the night in the 1600. Wallert finished the night by winning three events, with two of them coming from the dynamic relay team of Jake Brosius, Gabe Anstetter, Carson Kummer, and Ryan Brosius. The quartet claimed gold in the 4x200. "My team and I really put in the work for these races, so we are really happy right now," Anstetter said. "It's always fun competing in this meet because it's neat to see a lot of friends and run against them." Wallert's other gold came from Duke Feely in the discus. His season best throw of 162.3 breezed to the title by more than 30 feet and placed him just outside the top 10 in the state. While Feely got top honors in discus, his rival Dakota Hoffman earned Western Dubuque's first win of the night in the shot put with a distance of 53.25. Tanner Nauman, Devin Nyhaus, Jack Wushmer, and Marcus Walker claimed gold in the 4x100, and Logan Brosius continued his strong run in the 100 hurdles, winning with a time of 15:06. Cascade kicked the night off in style, winning its first of two golds with a school record time of 1:35.61 in the sprint medley relay. The team of Luca Rickles, Jackson McAller, Jake Minster, and Cole Miller notched their name in the Cougar record books. "I knew it was going to be a tough race," said Miller, who ran anchor. "It's fun to be part of a new record, and hopefully we will be the ones to break it in the future." The Cougars' other win of the night came in the distance medley with Rickles, Jonah Matternack, Isaac Neva, and Miller taking it in 3:44.91. In girls track, Bierman Sparks Cats by Danny Miller. For Audrey Bierman and her Western Dubuque teammates, it was nice to be back home competing after the pressure of the Drake relays. The senior sprinter was involved in 4 of the 5 winning events for the Bobcats as they claimed the Dubuque County Championship team title Tuesday at Dalzell Field with 153 points. Last year, I don't think we placed first a lot, so it feels really good, Bierman said. I love competing against people I know and am familiar with, so it was really fun. Hempstead placed 2nd in the team standings with a total of 117, followed by Waller at 104 and Senior at 100. Cascade placed 5th with 66 points, and Dyersville-Beckman finished 6th with 32. Bierman ran anchor for the opening sprint medley relay, along with Elish Schindler, Sammy Recker, and Bryn Walters, that took gold in 1:49.97. She also placed 1st in the 100, the 400, and the 200. Western Dubuque's other gold medals came in the discus with 2 top finishers. Abigail Klusner won the event with a distance of 111 feet 11 inches, and Maddie Maas took silver. Waller won 4 events on the night, led by season-long dominance in the relay races. Jamie Schmid, Ellie Meyer, Alana Dugan, and Josie Belkin claimed gold in the 4x800 in 9:56.54. It was an awesome feeling, Dugan said. We made some good moves during it, so it just felt really good to run. It's exciting to compete against everyone from Dubuque instead of people from out of town, Belkin added. Ariana Yaklich, Abby Wallace, Megan McDonald, and Schmid won the 4x200. Yaklich, Wallace, and McDonald teamed up with Tessa Burning to claim the 4x100 in 49.47, and Burning won the Eagles' other gold in the long jump with a distance of 17 feet 9 inches. Hempstead took home 5 gold medals on the night, kicked off by the distance medley team of Emily Klein, Emma Hilken, Brooke O'Brien, and Keely Lightson, who breezed with a time of 4:17 and 72. Lightson also placed 1st in the 800, while Maya Curry won the 400 hurdles, and O'Brien claimed the 1500. O'Brien, Ellie Hermiston, Julia Gell, and Lightson finished the night with a bang by winning the 4x400 in 4:07.67. Senior claimed 2 golds on the night, with Lily Schmidt winning the 3000 and Breen Duffy claiming the shot put crown with a distance of 34:10. It wasn't exactly the time I was hoping for, but I'll take it, Schmidt said. Yesterday was definitely the first day we noticed the heat, and it affected us. Cascade's 1st win of the night came in the 4x100 shuttle hurdles as Elizabeth Gibbs, Rachel Romberg, Libby Felton, and Devin Simon took gold in 1:08.22. Simon and Felton took the top 2 seats in the 100 hurdles, with Simon taking gold in 16.12 and Felton silver in 16.45. Dyersville-Beckman's lone win of the night came by Kirsten Schmidt in the high jump with a personal best distance of 5:01. It felt really good, Schmidt said. It's fun to see everyone out here, and it's just good to see our team compete and that we can compete against these bigger schools. For the local and area roundup, Chieftains win thrilling opener against Prairie. Sophomore Emily Bierman drilled a walk-off double in the bottom of the 8th inning to score Aspen Walsh and Malia Weber, leading the Potosi-Cassville softball team to a thrilling 7-6 victory over Prairie du Chien in the season opener on Tuesday in Potosi, Wisconsin. Jessica Noonan drove in 3 runs on 2 hits, which included a home run for the Chieftains. Weber had a solid outing in the circle, tossing the complete game and allowing 9 hits and 2 walks with 8 strikeouts. Lily Cron and Macy Banasik hit doubles for the Blackhawks. Mineral Point 9, Southwestern 5 at Mineral Point, Wisconsin. Caitlin Cox and Jada Sudmeyer drove in 2 runs apiece, and Olivia Wendhausen added a triple as the Pointers won their opener against the Wildcats. In prep baseball, Prairie du Chien 13, West Salem 4 at West Salem, Wisconsin. The Blackhawks came out swinging and had plenty of offense in their season opener. In prep track and field, Grebel Powers Bellevue at Goose Lake, Iowa. Bellevue's Brady Griebel continued his stellar senior track season with a pair of wins, leading the Comet boys to victory at the Northeast Rebel Relays on Monday night. The Comet scored 142.5 team points and outpaced the 10-team field to earn the victory. Griebel, a University of Northern Iowa recruit, picked up wins in the 1600 in 4 minutes 32 seconds and the 3200 in 10 minutes 45 seconds. Teammate Alex Pitts won the 110 hurdles and the 400 hurdles. The boys' shuttle hurdle relay team of Colby Sieverding, Max Jackson, Riley Carrier, and Pitts also took gold in 106.20. The Bellevue girls finished third with Bellevue Marquette in fourth. Shayla Oster swept the shot put and discus for the Comets. Bellevue also won the 4x200 relay with Morgan Meyer, Colin DeShaw, Adissa Liebfried, and Kalicia DeShaw in 1 minute 51.66. And the distance medley relay of Kalicia DeShaw, Colin DeShaw, Alexa Roeder, and Gabby Williamson in 4 minutes and 30 seconds. Holly Beauchamp won the 3,000 for the Mohawks in 12:29.84. In girls prep soccer, Dubuque Hempstead 3, Waterloo 0 at Timmerman Field. Alicia Duccini picked up her first career coaching win at her alma mater as the Mustangs blanked Waterloo. Western Dubuque 1, Cedar Falls 0 at Epworth, Iowa. The Bobcats scored the first half behind Faith Bauer and then outlasted the Tigers for a big Mississippi Valley Conference win. Clinton 4, Bellevue Marquette 0 at Clinton. Julia Peniston made 10 saves as goalkeeper, but the Mohawks couldn't get their offense going on Monday night. In boys prep soccer, Waterloo West 4, Dubuque Senior 3 at Waterloo, Iowa. The Class 3A number 13 ranked Rams scored twice in a span of 18 seconds in the first half, and Jacob Conrady scored in the second half for Senior, but the Wahawks pulled it off out in the penalty kicks shootout. Clinton 3, Bellevue Marquette 2 at Clinton, Iowa. Carson Michaels and Ty Closer scored goals, and Jacob Bakey set a new school record in net with 29 saves, but the Mohawks lost in a penalty kicks shootout on Monday night. In boys prep tennis, Cedar Rapids Xavier 9, Dubuque Wallert 0 at Cedar Rapids, Iowa. The battle between the two top-ranked teams in the Iowa Class 1A was All Saints, as number 1 Xavier blanked number 2 Wallert. In Cedar Falls 8, Dubuque Hempstead 1 at Roos Courts, Kareem Kassas and Kunal Kuhn picked up the Mustangs' lone victory at number 1 doubles by a 6-2, 7-6 score, but Hempstead lost to the Tigers. In girls prep tennis, Western Dubuque 9, Waterloo East 0 at Epworth, Iowa. Meredith Horner, Ellie McDermott, Shelby Olberding, and Lexi Clemen all won in convincing fashion as the Bobcats cruised past the Trojans. Cedar Falls 9, Dubuque Hempstead 0 at Cedar Falls, Iowa. The Mustangs were swept on the road by the tough Tigers. Cedar Rapids Xavier 9, Dubuque Wallert 0 at O'Connor Tennis Center. The Golden Eagles were blanked by the Saints. And in girls prep golf, Edgewood Colesburg 208, Postville 253 at Postville, Iowa. Maddie Stryker earned medalist honors with a 4-over par 39, and the Vikings triumphed at Lone Pine Golf Course. In women's tennis, Central 5, Loris 2 at Pella, Iowa. The Dewhawks bowed out of the American Rivers Conference Tournament with a quarterfinals loss to the Dutch, which took control with a 3-0 sweep in doubles. Former Wallard grad Audrey Hinds earned a 6-1, 6-3 victory at number 1 singles for the Dewhawks. And in college golf, Pride men 9th, women 11th at Raymore, Missouri. Justin Everson tied for 31st overall with a 3-round 248, helping the Clark men place 9th out of 11 teams at the Heart of America Conference Championships. The Pride women placed 11th overall with Lila Lindgren finishing 37th overall with a 309. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. For Wednesday, April 28, 2021, I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.